Good day, everyone. This is Bob Keebler, and today is March 26, 2010. And today we're going to talk about the 2010 healthcare reconciliation bill. In particular, what I'd like to focus on today is the 3.8% Medicare tax that's being imposed on higher income Americans. So what's happened here and where are we going? The bill contains a number of tax provisions, but the provision today we're going to talk about is basically for individuals with a large degree of investment income, passive type income, there is going to be a new 3.8% tax that's going to be imposed. Now, how does this tax work and what does it really mean? Big picture. What it means is for many Americans, today their rate might be at 28 or 33 or 35. And those individuals in the 28, 33, and 35% rates will see their rate go up by virtue of the repeal of the Bush tax cuts to 31, 36, and 39.6% on January 1st, 2011. The surtax will bring those rates up to basically 34.8, 39.8, and 43.4% by 2013. Those are two unrelated changes. One is the repeal of the Bush tax cuts. One is this new surtax. Now, today we're going to talk about what does the surtax apply to, how is it computed, and who should pay very close attention to this. We're also going to spend a little bit of time on why Roth conversions in 2010, while the rate is at 33 and 35%, may be very efficacious, especially for individuals that are in the surtax. So these are things that we need to compute. Now, in reality, here's what we have. Because of the surtax, we now have three tax systems that wealthy individuals in America have to pay very close attention to. The first system is the regular tax system, the tax that all of us pay when we do our tax return. The second system is the alternative minimum tax system, which many of you know is a system designed to take into account to force individuals taking too great of an advantage of the tax code to give back some of those advantages. And then finally, there's the surtax, which will be imposed on basically excess investment income. So where do we start? When you're looking at the surtax, you want to start with the statutory provisions. And basically, what the tax will be imposed on net investment income. And net investment income is the sum of gross income over allocable expenses. So when you look at this, you have to look at for individuals, the tax will be imposed will also be imposed for estates and trusts. Now, investment income will be defined as the things you would normally expect: interest, dividends, capital gains, annuities, rents, royalties, passive activity income. Now, a couple of things you want to do. Circle the word passive activity income and think about this. What we have is, let's just say that Dad owns a building. So he owns this building that he's leasing for $500,000 a year. And he determines he no longer needs the building, and he transfers a portion of it up to he and his spouse's unified credit amount to their children. And now the children are receiving income from that building. In Dad's hands, he's there every day. He's working more than 500 hours a year at the project. He's an active investor. So he would not be subject to the surtax. But his children, who are passive, would be subject to the surtax. So we're going to have to talk about this. Now, investment income specifically does not include active trader business income. And it doesn't include distributions from IRAs or qualified plans, which I'll talk about in a second. And it doesn't include any income that you have to take into account for purposes of the self-employment tax. But it would include passive real estate investments. Now, active real estate investments would not be included in the definition of net investment income. Now, interestingly enough, the gain on the sale of an active interest in an S-corp or corporation, what's going to be investment income is limited to the net gain that would be recognized if all of the partnership's S corporation interests were sold at fair market value. So, what else do we need to know? We need to know that modified adjusted gross income is the sum of gross income, if you look at the tax return, line 37, plus net foreign exclusion amount under section 911. Now, the tax is imposed on the lesser of, and try to put this formula in your mind, the lesser of net investment income or the excess of MAGI, modified adjusted gross income, over a threshold amount. A threshold amount for a married couple is $250,000. A threshold amount for a single individual is $200,000, but the threshold amount for trusts will be right around $11,000 or $12,000. It's going to be the place at which you go into the highest tax rate. So we need to be very deliberate when we're planning for trusts. The other thing that is going to come into effect here is because of the effect on trusts, I think when we're picking year ends for trusts, for most of the wealthy individuals that will die this year, the smart choice of a year end is going to be November 30th. And for any individual that dies in 2011 or 12, the same thing would occur, because if you start the year on November 30th, the surtax would not apply all the way up until November 30th, 2013. It would not apply for all income earned through that period of time. And if you trap that income in the trust, of course, you're going to pay at the old rate, not at the new rate. So these will be very important strategies going forward. So let's focus in on married filing jointly taxpayers. They can have up to $250,000 of MAGI before this tax is going to be imposed. Okay, now, so who does this new tax affect? If your MAGI is less than, so for a married couple, again, single individuals are $200,000, but let's focus on a married couple. If you represent a married couple, all their income together adds up to $249,000. Even if it's all interest and dividends, they would not have this tax. But if their MAGI is greater than the threshold amount, they're going to have this tax. And I have some examples which will help illustrate who this applies to and who this doesn't apply to. John is a single man and has $100,000 of salary and $50,000 of net investment income. Now remember what I said. He has a $200,000 threshold, so the 3.8% Medicare tax simply would not apply. Now on the other hand, Mary is single and has only $225,000 of net investment income. What's going to happen in Mary's case is she'll take 225, which would be her MAGI, and she will subtract from that the $200,000 threshold amount, and she would pay the surtax on $25,000. Now let's look at Terry and Tina. Terry and Tina are filing jointly and have only $300,000 of salaries. Because they have wage income, the 3.8% Medicare tax would not apply to wage income. They have no investment income. Now, Paula and Peter are married, filing jointly, have $400,000 of salaries and $50,000 of net investment income. Now, in this case, the 3.8% tax would apply to the $50,000 of net investment income. And there's going to be basically another $1,900 of tax that would be imposed. Now, we have to look at this lesser of. Scott and Sarah are married, filing jointly. They have $200,000 of salaries and $150,000 of net investment income. So $150,000 of interest and dividends. The 3.8% Medicare tax would apply to $100,000 of income, excess of MAGI of $350,000 or the $250,000 threshold. So there's a little bit of a formula there that we have to get our arms around. Now, planning considerations. There's a specific exclusion in the law that carves out distributions from IRAs and qualified plans when you determine your net investment income. So if all I had was $1 million distribution from a qualified plan or $1 million Roth conversion, none of that would be subject to the 3.8% tax. The tax is focused in on the investment in interest, dividends, distributions from non-qualified annuities. Those would be the items that would be subject to this tax. Now, so when we're planning, we have to plan at two dimensions. The first dimension we plan at is going to be to take a really hard look at this and say, how do I reduce my investment income? Now, the things that quickly come to mind, municipal bonds, tax-deferred non-qualified annuities, non-qualified deferred compensation, might be a way of shifting dollars, deferring them for a while so you're not earning investment income on them. Life insurance, again, is a shelter, whether you're using a MEC where you just create wealth for your children or grandchildren, or whether you save money in a life insurance contract and later borrow or pull out principal. Now, the other dimension that we have to look at is when we're trying to reduce investment income, we might also look at charitable remainder trusts, a way to smooth out income, to get deferral. also non-grantor, there's some promise here, but the law is not clear. We might want to look at non-grantor charitable remainder trusts. If, when you compute the magi of a trust, you're allowed to deduct the 642C deduction for what goes to charity, then arguably there'd be no investment surtax income at the trust level. And that might be a very efficient way to avoid some of the surtax for a client that's charitably inclined. Now, so that is how we reduce investment income. And there'll be dozens of strategies that come along with that. The other, when you look at this, if you have a lot of investment income, depreciation on real estate may help you. If you have a lot of passive income, you get more real estate, you'll have more depreciation, which might offset some of that. And then depletion, of course, on oil and gas investments has the same effect. Now, the other place we're going to look at that will help us if we reduce magi. So what we're trying to do is the first thing is we want to reduce our investment income, shift it into a different category if possible. The second thing we want to do strategically is reduce our magi to below $250,000. And if we can do that, then we will pay less tax, less of the surtax. Now, you know, if somebody has to pay a surtax on $10,000 or $20,000, it's probably not worth doing a lot of planning on. But if you have a person that has $1 million worth of surtax income, you know, looking at this, the surtax on $1 million is $38,000. So we want to be very diligent with this. Now, the other thing we have to take into account is how do IRA distributions play into all this? Again, remember what I said. If we take $1 million from an IRA, that is not going to be subject to the 3.8% tax. But let's say that you represent a retired couple and they have exactly pension distributions, or they have investment income. Let's make this very simple. They have investment income of exactly $250,000. So from CDs, dividends, things they've accumulated over the years. Now, from age 60 to age 70, they lived off that, and they would never be subject to the surtax. But at age 70 and a half, they have to begin taking required minimum distributions from their IRA. Now, let's just say that the required minimum distributions were $200,000. If that were the case, now what we would have is their magi would go from 250, where there was no surtax, up to 450. So even though the IRA distributions themselves are not subject to the surtax technically under the statute, it would push their magi up to $450,000. So what do? We take $450,000 of magi, we subtract out our $250,000 threshold amount, and now we have $200,000 subject to the surtax of $7,600. Now, step back from this. Ask yourself the question. The rate on Roth or on regular IRA distributions is going to go from basically 35% today to 43.4% in the future. Now, the future being 2013, so relatively soon in the near term. So what we're looking at is you have to ask yourself the question, does it pay from a overall strategic standpoint, and does it pay from a more myopic standpoint, looking just at the surtax, to convert over to the Roth IRA? So what I did is I ran some numbers, and I took away all the other variables. I just focused on rates. I said if somebody was at a 35% rate today and they could convert, and they would be in the way their magi would work out, they'd be their IRA would in essence be taxed at 43.4% in the future. Then how does that play out? And so I ran these numbers, and after a period of, let's say somebody did this and they were 60, by the time they're 85, they will have increase their wealth by about 25%, and that's because of the difference. So what in reality happens, I'm looking at this on $1 million, on $1 million conversion with basically an 8.4% change in rate, what you're going to have is you're going to increase the wealth transfer by about 27%. So you're looking at that, now that's out to age 85, that doesn't count the stretch, that doesn't, and this assumes you're taking the money to pay the conversion taxes from the IRA itself. If you have outside funds, this is going to work out much better. So this is a big thing. This is a really big thing. Now, what we have to do in the short term is determine which of our clients are in this bubble. So let's say you represent somebody whose magi will always be below $250,000. This doesn't matter. You can walk away from it. Let's say you represent someone whose magi is always going to be very high. They have board of director fees coming in of $250,000. So between their board fees and their regular pensions, defined benefit pensions, are already at 250, then the Roth conversion for this reason alone would not help. But let's say you represent someone whose normal investment income is $250,000. Passive real estate, oil and gas, dividends, interest, a nice, very efficient, well-balanced portfolio, but it comes to interest and investment income of exactly 250. Now they turn 70 and they have to start taking money out of their IRA. In essence, every penny they take out of their IRA will force their investment income to be subject to this extra 3.8% surtax. That's why I think this will drive Roth conversions. So there's a lot here. I would encourage you to start with reading the statute and the bill, and then to take a real hard look at how this tax works. Remember, this is a third tax system, okay? So you have to be familiar with the regular tax system, the AMT system, and the surtax system. Although this won't take as long to get your arms around as the other two systems, you're going to have to look at all three. And you have to, I'm going to close on the note that for many Americans, what we're going to see for the wealthiest clients we represent, we're going to see their tax rate go from 35% to 39.6% this coming January and up to 43.4% in January 2013. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today, and I encourage you to pay very close attention to developments on the surtax.